Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hey, before the episode starts, I want to let you know it is brought to you by the new comedy web series called Howard's Hot Roommate. So let me pose you this question. What if your new roommate was the woman of your dreams? Would you be cool? Not Howard. Would you be tough? Not Howard. Would you be sexy? Definitely not Howard. Howard's Hot Roommate stars Timothy Honor, Stephanie Maloof, and more importantly, was created and written by Earwolf's very own John O'Cohen, which he's a friend of mine. I work with him. Great dude. You can check out all 6 episodes of Howard's Misadventures now at meethoward.com. Go to meethoward.com and laugh. I enjoyed it immensely. So here's the show. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins, and thank you for tuning in and downloading this to your device or computer or however it is that you listen to it. We're getting close to our 200th episode, and I realized that like maybe a week ago, and it's like, oh, should I do something special for it? Nah, I'm going to do something special for probably our 4-year anniversary, which comes up in April, which is nuts that I've been doing this for 4 years. And it's awesome that you, the listener, keep giving me encouragement to do this, you know, by your downloads, by your tweets, by your Facebook messages, whatever it is, however you're interacting with me. I really, really do appreciate it. And I feel like we've built something together in some weird way, even though I'm doing all the damn work. Anyways, just kidding with you. But speaking of work, I teamed up with another incredible podcast because really podcasts are obviously such a fun medium. And if you're listening to this right now, you obviously enjoy it. And I love to expose people to new shows. So this is a team up partnership with the show The Damn Finecast, done by two fine gentlemen over in the United Kingdom, Tony and Scott, who basically have been doing it for the past year, and they cover the soundtrack beat. And I know that may turn off some of you immediately to be like, oh, what? I don't even know what that is. But here, let me get up on my soapbox and pontificate a little bit about the beauty of scores and soundtracks. So for those of you that know and follow the show pretty regularly, know that I'm a huge fan of that. And so I've been listening to their show and I love it. It's great because what they do is, you know, they take what's been happening in sort of the soundtrack score world as far as like what's coming out. And then they talk about purchases they made the past week. And then they also have a very in-depth interview with composers and luminaries within that sort of scene. And it's amazing because I've been able to draw so many conclusions of the lineage of people that have been influenced by punk and hardcore and independent music to the soundtrack world. A lot of people who are putting out records within that world are basically come from the DIY independent scene that we all love so dear. So there's a direct correlation for me to that. And then also just the fact that I really, really enjoy listening to that music because it's either beautiful, haunting, whatever they're trying to encapsulate within the film. And it's just such an awesome world. And so their show really dives deep into it. And honestly, it's just an education process for me because, I don't pretend to be as knowledgeable about this world as I do, mid-90s hardcore. But I love that I'm able to learn about the stuff that exists out there and then revisit movies. And it's just a great service. So if you love film, you will love this show as well. And then if you love music, you'll also like the show. So we decided to appear on each other's shows and do kind of a, sort of roundtable, so to speak. So it's definitely not your traditional sort of interview that you're used to. But at the same time, I think you will really enjoy this. So please check out their show, The Damn Fine Cast. I encourage you greatly to do that. And another favor, please, Amazon affiliate link. I know I'm beating it into your heads for those of you that listen to this on a weekly basis, but just do it. Just take this link that you see in your show notes, copy it, paste it, or click it, put it in your browser, bookmark it, and then shop. Because realistically, that gives me a nice little kickback. And it takes you nothing. There's nothing that comes out of your pocket. You're able to benefit the show in so many different ways. And plus, it doesn't matter where you're from. Like, you could be in the Ukraine listening to this, which, to be fair, there are a few of you that listen to the Ukraine. If they have Amazon and they ship, then I will be able to get a kickback. So do that for me and for the show because, I'm not going to, bug you in so many other respects as far as like, oh, please give me money. The show won't exist without you because, I obviously have advertisers and that helps the show out greatly. That's just a really, really, really simple way for you to kind of dive right in there and do that. So anyways, here is our conversation with the Damn Fine Cast, soundtracks, music, punk, hardcore, all that stuff. And I'll talk to you after we're done.
Joining us now on the DFC is Ray Harkins from the 100 Words podcast. And for this episode, we're going to do something a little bit different, where this portion of our podcast will be featured on Ray's podcast. So, Ray, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
I am doing splendidly well because I get to be a guest on this fine establishment of a podcast.
Oh, please, please. You flatter us. You really do.
Well, it's one of those things where it's like the community of podcasters that focus on music is obviously pretty small. And so when you find like-minded folks such as yourself, it's like, hey, you're doing a great thing. More people need to know about what you're doing. And hopefully people that listen to this aren't like, hey, Ray's a terrible person, I won't listen to his show. So hopefully it'll work out that way.
I'm sure it will. It's one of those like funny things. You did touch on it that, I don't really know of that many musical podcasts that necessarily focus on one thing or a few things like us. It's one of the reasons why we started doing the DFC is because there are other soundtrack podcasts out there. There's a couple that I know of, but none that are kind of doing things the way we are. And, as big as podcasting has become, it's still kind of baffling to me that the whole thing isn't bigger yet.
I agree wholeheartedly. It kind of frustrates me when I look at the iTunes charts in regards to the music section for podcasts, because honestly, the top, 40, 50 shows, like a good 20 of them are, and no disparaging them, but like, it's like 4-hour DJ mixes.
Yeah.
It's like, here's Tiesto's club mix. And it's like, that's not a podcast. That's him playing music for 4 hours.
Yeah.
That's like, it sounds like my idea of a nightmare, but I just don't get it, where it's like there's not more musical commentary. And so that's why it's a good, hey, basically it's a good thing we both exist.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I really do. And I don't think any of the other podcasts I listen to really focus on music, the actual playing of music. Most of the podcasts, all of the podcasts I think I listen to on a regular basis are mainly just, they might have one or two songs, but some are just dialogue based. And for me, that's originally what I thought a podcast was. I didn't think you could you know, do music on a podcast. I thought it had to adhere to that. Just no, it's dialogue. That's what a podcast is. But I guess it may have started off that way, but as time has progressed and podcasting has become bigger, it's become, you know, it's become like radio, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it basically, it's like you can obviously get as niche as you like, which, you know, both of the things that we are doing are incredibly niche. But at the same time, it's like the people that are passionate about it love it so much. And it's like you feel when you discover a new show, it's the same way when you discover a new soundtrack or a new composer or a new band. You just become so enamored with them that you're like, so I'm going to collect every single piece of music by this particular person because they're the best thing ever.
True.
Which, you know, not everybody has that impulse, but fortunately we do.
Yeah. I mean, do you find it that we haven't been going as long, but we regularly hear from people where they're like, oh, I've just discovered your show. I've gone back and I've listened to all 30 something episodes in a week. And I just think that's insane. Like, how have you done? That's like 60 something hours of like listening to me speak, which is just crazy. Have you found that as well? Well, people will come along and just be like, oh man, I like this guy and this guy and this guy. And he's talking to everyone I love. So I need to listen to everything.
Yeah. It definitely is. Like, it's weird. I think I'm overly attached to the people that listen to the show. It's like, if anybody dares to email me, I'm like, all right, well, looks like we're friends for life. Like, thanks for checking out the show. But there definitely is that dialogue where people jump in because they like a particular guest that I've brought on. Mm-hmm. And then they start to listen, you know, they start to cherry pick and listen to the guests they like. But then more often than not, they end up being like, yeah, I started listening to people who I don't even care about from, you know, this band A or band B. And then they start to really, really just enjoy the conversations. Because ultimately, I think, you know, a common thread with both of our shows is that even though so many people come from such kind of, you know, diverse backgrounds and are doing different things that might not be connected to independent music, and that was obviously what prompted me to reach out to you guys.
Yeah.
The origin stories of so many people are so similar, because like ultimately the stuff that we are interested in is a subculture, and a subculture of a subculture, where it's like we just start to get more involved in really weird, bizarre outsider art that is like, oh yeah, just because I like, you know, metallic hardcore or punk, I really would like to see someone's brains get eaten too. So where does this lie? Oh, yeah, wow. There's horror movies.
It's also like, for me, it's kind of like when Tony came along with the idea for our podcast, it was like, oh shit, I now have an excuse for all of this madness. A little bit. It was like, now I have a reason to talk about it. And that kind of will validate it a bit more than just the madness of me listening and collecting to all these soundtracks and knowing literally no one else who's as interested as this stuff as I am.
Totally. It's the great equalizer where it's like you all kind of, you know, are in the same room and then you just start to look around and you're just like, hey, there was a lot more people into this than you would have originally anticipated. Yeah. And especially too, where it's like, I think to me, the most important thing in this digital age is like obviously building a context. Cause it's like, you know, it's really easy for anybody to do research on a composer or a band or whatever. And understand, relatively speaking, the historical context of where this person lies. But there are some things that are so incredibly difficult to put into words, unless you are going to talk about it for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. Mm. And then it'll only make more sense where it's like, yeah, do you realize that like Goblin was a huge band? Like they seem like this weird small corner of the universe, but it's like they had to turn down so many offers for soundtracks because they were getting hit up by everybody to be like, yeah, could you sound like that other movie you did? And they're like, well, no, can we do something different? And it's like, all right, well then how about the, you know, B-rate and C-rate studio musicians that were just knocking Goblin off? It's like, it's unbelievable.
I once, this is completely, you know, out of nowhere, but I once had the chance to ask them some questions. Not as an like an interview, but it was, you know, a show and there was a Q&A afterwards. And it was one of those classic, I was talking a bit about some of the stuff you're saying and then also saying, did you guys sort of always like horror, or was it something that you got kind of typecast into? And it was one of those ones where I literally talked for about 5 minutes and then Massimo Moranti just went, no. And that was just, and I was like
okay, got it.
Shut down. Cool. One thing I wanted to ask you, Ray, actually, like you've been doing the podcast thing for a while now, and you know we're still kind of relatively new to it, and you know most people when I see people, you know, back in or London, or I keep up with people on Facebook and stuff, and they're like, oh, you know, what are you up to now? I'm like, oh, you know, I've got this podcast thing, and some people get it, and some people understand what it is, but then I've had to explain what a podcast is to like my parents or a family member, or even with my writing. It's like, well, I write about horror movie soundtracks, and they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like,
right.
Well, you know, like a movie and the soundtrack. And they're like, no, I know what a soundtrack is, but why would anybody want to read about that? Or why would totally. Anybody want to listen to you talk about that? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Thanks for pissing all over everything I'm doing. But it's just, have you found it like, maybe not so much now because you've been going for a while, but did back in the, like when you first started, did you find having to explain that you're a podcaster and people just looked at you sideways?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the best way you used to describe it before, obviously the boom of podcasting in the past year and a half, 2 years, was just the, oh yeah, it's kind of like internet radio, and mm-hmm. people are like, oh, okay, I get it. But then, yeah, but now you can use the word podcast and it's like, oh, okay. But I mean, obviously now it's kind of got to the point where, you know, if someone says that they're in a band now, it's like, big deal. Who cares if you're in a band? And it's like, it's the same token idea as podcasting where it's like, oh, so you got a podcast. Like, that's cool. Like,
yeah.
Like what real original idea there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it, to me, it shows the stick-to-itiveness. It's like, if you are around for honestly, like usually a year to a year and a half is when it sticks into, you know, you'll be able to see if anyone cares about what you're doing.
Sure, sure.
And to me, that's the best part of just the execution of said idea. And then, you know, even if you have a small community of people that care about what you do, it's still awesome. So yeah, no, it's definitely come a long way to where people understand it a lot more, but there still is the occasional guest that I have on where I have to describe. It's like, so this isn't live. I promise, like, I'll be able to edit. If you say something stupid, I promise I'll be able to edit. And it's like, oh, okay. But generally speaking, it's more, oh yeah, I get it.
I don't know if I'm speaking, I might be speaking for Tony, I might not be. But it's always like important to me that we didn't get hung up too much on sort of viewing or listening figures. Because that can detract you from the whole point of what you started doing. And I think that the internet does breed a bit of that. It breeds a bit of kind of like, how well am I doing by looking at figures for things, whether it's, you know, people's Twitter followers or whatever that is. And I catch myself a couple of times thinking, oh, I wonder how we could get more listeners. And it's like, no. It doesn't matter how many we have, you know, we just got to do what we do. And well, if people find it, they find it.
That's it. When we started this, I genuinely didn't think, I didn't think nobody would listen. I thought some people would, but I mean, I'm not bragging or anything, but over the last 10 or 11 months, the show has grown far bigger than I ever expected it. Like, literally, I had no clue that we would, you know, if someone a year ago would have said to me, oh, you know, you're going to be speaking to Fabio Frizzi or Christopher Young, I would have just been like, oh, okay, fine, whatever, weirdo. But it's, you know, like, our podcast has become this thing where we can talk to people online about the same things, and we can recommend a record, and someone's like, oh, you should hear this if you like this. And, you know, it's basically like, we just have this community of people that are just the coolest people I've ever spoken to, and I've never met them. And, you know, it's such a great thing.
It totally is. I think it's the ability, because I often say this to people, you know, that I have on my show, where it's like, it's very difficult, like even people that you're close friends with, to have, like, you know, coffee with them, or like, hey, let's carve out an hour of our day. And it's like, you know, everyone's busy. Everyone has 9 million things going on. And when you're able to like schedule a time to speak to somebody in a constructive fashion that will obviously serve some sort of like self-promotion, and then also serve a function of, oh, getting to know that person a little bit better. Cause it's not like you sit down with your friends and they're like, all right, let's start from the beginning.
True.
And it's so it's this really weird sort of selfish act that I feel like I'm a part of as well, where I'm just like, If no one's listening, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I get to speak to people about, you know, more about who they are as a person, and obviously kind of what led them to do what they do. And I think that's another beautiful component of it, to be like, hey, do you have an hour to hang out with me?
Yeah.
No, and it's like it's like a priorities thing with us as well, where we started off, we were really adamant that we weren't going to pretend to be, but we're not like experts about what we're talking about.
No.
And what we kind of had going for us is that we kind of don't know each other that well, or each other's taste that well. So we can actually surprise each other and sort of introduce each other to stuff. And it was more important for us to just like come across as, it sounds really cheesy, but you know, just like one of the listeners, but mm-hmm. we happen to have just like gotten in front of a mic and are talking about it, and that's like way more important than because like the interview side of it, we were talking earlier, and it was like the interviews, to me, I think of them as an archive of stuff that's happening at the moment, rather than like interviews or kind of promotion or anything. It's almost like it's getting these people to talk about what they've done, and it's creating this sort of little archive of like a snapshot of what we saw happening around us at the time, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is. I didn't even think about it in those terms until I had a friend of mine who actually lived in London, and he was producing and editing the show with me. And it was one of those things where it takes an outsider to look at the sort of work that you're doing. And he was like, "Yeah, you're kind of preserving these people's story." I mean, obviously, as long as MP3s and audio exist,
future-proofed. Like
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of, you're documenting these things in the exact fashion that you're talking about. And it's like, it gets lost on you when you're just in the minutia of working on it. And then you're kind of like, oh, wow. Like you said, you're a year later and you're just like, oh, wow, I talked to all these rad people. And like, holy crap. Like if a person spends the time to listen to all these, they are probably going to come away with a better understanding of, these different facets of this subculture. Yeah. It's just, we're just waxing poetic about podcasts in general. My gosh, this is adorable.
It's not a bad thing. It's one of those, if I wasn't a part of the DFC, I'd be its biggest fan. I really would, because every week I come here, I look forward to seeing Scott. I look forward to listening to what he's got to play me. And there are times when Scott plays me the weirdest thing. And even though I don't get it and I don't enjoy it, I'm glad that he does. I'm glad that someone out there has made this music, put it on record, and now Scott can enjoy that. And it's one of the reasons why I love doing the show. And, as long as it keeps being fun, we will continue to do it. I think whenever it feels like we're obligated to do it is probably when we'll just be like,
I never really think of us as that punk, but I think we are actually, in the sense of as soon as we feel like somebody's got an expectation of us or, is actually, like you say, kind of pushing us to do something, we'll be like, see ya.
That's it. It's not like we are not recording it for the people that are listening out there, but we're recording it mainly for us. It's a thing because we like doing what we're doing. But, if it came along and, KFC or McDonald's wanted to sponsor us, and I was like, but you have to do like a 5-minute segment on McNuggets, it'd be like, I think
it's nuts as well, because we genuinely don't think of ourselves as like super experts at all, literally at all. And then occasionally, I can't remember who it was, but one of the composers we interviewed was like, "But you guys are like the experts." And what he was responding to was that we were just interested in what he was saying, rather than these interviews that are kind of plowing through the rote questions and the same kind of touchstones from their career or whatever. I think that's what's cool, is that it is like really democratic. As long as you're enthusiastic and interested in something, I think it's interesting to listen to that. And so that's kind of I've got very limited experience of listening to podcasts, and certainly been involved. This is the only one I've ever been involved in, so it's to me, that seems like that's the coolest thing about it. When you're not pretending to be, kind of the most worldly.
Yeah, this isn't the definitive tome soundtracks in general. Yeah.
In fact, you need 30 people doing the same thing slightly differently, and then you've got a totally kind of thing, haven't you? You've got sort of...
Then you got a weird tapestry. But the I think the reason that obviously I felt such a kinship, it was, I don't know, the idea that obviously when I reached out to you guys and introduced the idea of like, hey, it seems really, really bizarre to me that it's like, not only, I mean, because we've had similar guests. It's like, you know, I've had Kevin from Waxwork, I had Spencer from, you know, Death Waltz and Mondo, and like, we've had a lot of the same guests. But then it was like, I was seeing all of these weird stories start to emerge of just like, oh, essentially every single one of these people that owns, you know, a prominent label within the sort of, you know, revival soundtrack era that we're in right now is connected to independent music, because it's the same exact idea. It's like, you don't need permission to put out the soundtrack. I mean, you do from a master rights perspective. you could bootleg the shit out of it, like a lot of people do. But I just started to see all these threads, and it was so interesting that it was like, I was hearing it not only echoed in the people that I had on my show, but then just hearing it, you know, with the Slasher, you know, film festival. It's like all these people where I was just like, oh dude, you were like a punk and hardcore kid too. And it's like, of course it makes sense, because like I was joking about earlier, you're into weird music, and then it makes sense you're into weird movies. Like, it's just art you're trying to shove in your head that no one else likes.
Yeah, no, it's completely true. I mean, even to the same extent, Scott and I have come from, you know, as I was mentioning to you off air, I used to DJ metal, hardcore, put on hardcore shows, put on metal shows, just because I wanted to do it. You know, it was one of those things where everything I liked, there wasn't many people doing at the time. So you just do it yourself. It really, like, as cliched and as cheesy as it is, I've always been a big, like, proponent of, well, no one else is doing it, so why can't I? I'm just going to, you know, what's going to stop me? Okay, failure will stop me, that's it.
Yeah, you kind of saying it so clearly, I can see why we connected, because, like, I pretty much everything I've done has been for a handful of people. And that just seems to be, like, my kind of karma with stuff, is that the particular niche things that I'm into are never going to really be that kind of massively supported or attended or whatever, but I'm always really happy with that kind of that you know, really enthusiastic sort of turnout for stuff. And I was just thinking about it today. I was thinking, are there people out there that are kind of like me, but then they kind of think, it'd be really good to play in front of 10,000 people, what do I need to do to make that happen? Because that would be like the most insane thought I could ever have as a, you know, an artist or whatever, would just be to like, how do I change so I can have more people into me? And yeah, I think just like sometimes your karma is just that's not the case, that you're just going to appeal to a, you know, more niche kind of
audience. Right, and that's cool. You know, I think we're inside a...
Hey, I'm properly resigned to it, believe me.
We're a niche inside, and we like vinyl soundtracks. It's just records. It's actual, like, it's an area of record collecting. It's just, yeah, man, we're just living in that niche, living the dream.
Right, and I think it's interesting, too, when I obviously all of my friends and peers and people that, you know, either listen to my show or just know me as a human being, know my emergence. Like, I've always been a fan of soundtracks and scores in general, but I haven't, you know, I had to focus my record collection on collecting the stuff that made the most sense to me, which was like, you know, the punk and hardcore and indie rock stuff. I couldn't, honestly, the past 3 years have been horrific for me to not only keep up that side of the collection, but then just be like, oh, cool. Now there's this whole other goddamn world that I've jumped into head first, and I gotta buy all this stuff. And now, I mean, like you guys have been mentioning on your show recently, where it's like you have to economize now, where you're just not like blind buying every single thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I explain it to people, I'm just like, yeah, so these things that may seem, you know, off kilter to you, it's like, what do you mean you're listening to a soundtrack? Because people, you know, a person who isn't trained in the idea of a soundtrack, like, thinks it's just like Enya or Yanni or something like that. Of just like, oh, the stuff that people forget about in movies? It's like, are you kidding me? But then it's like, when I explain it, it starts to sink in. And especially, like I said, when I kind of pull in the thread of like, yeah, a lot of the people that are composing this music have come from the independent music world. It's like, you know, you look at the primetime composers of where it's like, you know, Cliff Martinez, and it's like, yeah, do you know he's in the Red Hot Chili Peppers? People are like, what? Mm-hmm. And like those threads just start to become so clear, and people really start to pay attention because of that thread, as opposed to just this like, you know, oh, this ethereal guy that doesn't have any connection to anything. He was just, he was born in a studio and like sort of pressing keys. And then all of a sudden he's a soundtrack composer. It's like, well,
no, it completely blows my mind thinking about, some of those guys and, you know, like, Clint Mansell, who comes from where we're recording this, and that he can go from like a small, you know, kind of indie pop sort of, band to, you know, composing the score for like Noah is completely insane. But obviously the same people that are into, you know, kind of like underground music and stuff were also into those films, so they're just growing up like just waiting really for someone to ask them, I bet. You know, just waiting for the right opportunity for someone to say, go on, you know, I think you can do it, take a chance. And
yeah, It totally is too, the same notion of, it's like I look at you know, Steve Moore from Zombie, and it's like the fact that it's like he was, you know, I saw Zombie in 2001 open for the Dillinger Escape Plan, and people that watched Zombie were like, what the fuck is this? Like, you know, they're opening for a very aggressive metallic hardcore ish type band. And so people didn't know what to do with it. But at the same time, it's like by the time that they finished playing, people understood it a little bit better. Like I could see that they warmed up the crowd, and it just takes those little intersections of like, hey, like, you know, whatever. Anytime anybody is like just starting to get into soundtracks and like, you know, looks to me for some guidance, it's like, yeah, you should listen to the original Dawn of the Dead soundtrack. And people listen to that and they're like, oh my gosh, there's like songs. And it's like, yeah, like that's all that this stuff is. It's songs that are played in movies. I don't know if you need a more simple description than this. And so people just, yeah, like I said, I think it really is about the way that you frame it. And then once people kind of wrap their heads around that, that's when it makes it so much easier for them to listen to this stuff in context, as opposed to like, so you mean like the Batman Forever soundtrack with like Seal, Kiss from a Rose? Like that's the sort of sound. It's like, no, I promise it's much different than what you think it is.
Or like you say, the stuff that you're not meant to pay attention to, which I'd wager that like the majority of filmgoers don't, you know, because that's the weird sort of like what we're kind of like involved in with film soundtracks and scores is odd, shining a light on them in a way, because that's just an element of filmmaking that kind of enriches the film. And it's actually not necessarily, you know, a lot of composers don't necessarily think of their scores as being music to listen to away from the film. They kind of, you talk to them and it's like, no, I did my job, you know, I enhanced the movie. And they're not really meant to sit there and necessarily notice it. But then how many kind of like incredible, memorable film themes can you play to like everybody and say, what's that from? And they'll be like, well, that's
Jaws,
The Godfather, you know. It's all going in. It's just that they're not like me. I'm sat there in the audience going, this music's fucking killing this film for me. Spielberg, will you stop hiring Quincy Jones? You know, that kind of thing. I can actually just have a film ruined by somebody just like not nailing the soundtrack, and I'm focused right in on it when it's not right. But yeah, I think for most people it is that the whole point is you're not meant to really be sitting there going, what do I think of the music at this point?
Right. Yeah. I also,
that's a bad film, I think, if you're sat there doing that.
Yeah, you're just like, you're only concentrating on the music. You're like, the visuals are relevant. Where I kind of saw a lot of people, especially within the sort of like independent, you know, punk hardcore indie rock community, start to pay attention to you know, whatever composition and bands existing within that framework, was when the Friday Night Lights soundtrack, when Explosions in the Sky, you know, scored that movie. And it was one of those things where it's like, here's this band that existed for, you know, 7 or 8 years prior to that. They get chosen to write this original compositions for this movie. And then all of a sudden people that were fans of Explosions in the Sky were just like, oh, what do you mean you did a football movie? What the hell is that?
Yeah.
And then they watch the movie and it's like, oh my God, it's beautiful. It makes so much sense. And then I think it's one of those things where it's like, of course, why would an instrumental indie rock band do a soundtrack? Of course it makes sense.
Yeah, but it's just like the Sigur Rós thing, or, you know, it's like, oh, they're already making soundtrack music. Okay, I understand.
Right. Yeah. And I think like when Mogwai did the Revenant, or not the Revenant, the Le Revenant, so I'm not even going to act like I can speak French. But like, again, once you start to see the infiltration of bands that exist for a long time, or even bands that don't exist for a long time, and just these people that kind of show the fact that there is not only a skill in the composition of this stuff, but that there is there's a reason that people should pay attention to it.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. It's one of those things. I also noticed, like, especially within the metal and mainly like the metal community, like occasionally you'll just kind of, I used to get it in London sometimes where like you would look at a person and they'd have like a zombie shirt on and you'd look at them and then give you a look as if to say, I also know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those things you get kind of like typecast as like a lot of people now. I'm like, out of my friends are like, oh, the soundtrack guy. And then someone else will like, just, I'll see them and they'll like, yeah, man, I really liked It Follows. Kind of like it's like a on the down low kind of thing. And it's like, no, it's okay. You can say it. It's good to be a soundtrack fan.
Right. And I also remember it was like whenever I made a deliberate choice to, because I sang for all the bands that I played in. And, you know, I occasionally would wear whatever, a Night of Living Dead shirt or zombie shirt when I was playing. And people would come up to me, and because usually after we played, I would immediately run back and sell the merch because, you know, I just that's what we did.
Yeah.
And so like when I did strike up those conversations in the same fashion of what you're talking about, where it was like, you know, there was at least two or three people that I started to like trade VHS, like they had more rare stuff than I did. And I was like, what do you mean you got Zombie Holocaust? Dude, could you dub me a copy of that? And it was like, again, the sort of secret handshake to an even more, like I was joking about earlier, even more niche community of just like, oh, it was beautiful. You felt like you spoke the same language, and like, you know, I could have spoken to those people for hours and hours, and I just met them, you know, because I was sweating on stage a few minutes ago. Yeah, it was like, because you put out that calling card.
Absolutely. And
people got it.
It was exactly the same thing for me when I used to like DJ in clubs in London. I would wear like a horror movie shirt or just like a movie shirt, and mainly with the horror stuff you would get people like, oh man, cool shirt. And it's like, do you know the film or do you just think it's a cool shirt? And they're like, no, and like know it. And then, you know, you strike up conversations and stuff. And the same thing has happened where I've been at kind of like a, what do you call them, like conventions, like movie conventions, where I'll wear like a hardcore band shirt or something and someone will be like, oh man, I dig that band. So it works both ways. I've always seen that sort of correlation between the two communities.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's what I think was so telling when I first started. I think I realized, you know, I'm sure you guys experience this where it's like, you know, you do kind of meet a person and you can kind of tell that they already like know what's up, so to speak, or you're just like, oh yeah, like this person seems like they are aware of, you know, everything that I'm paying attention to or whatever. But it's like, I remember cause, Spencer Hickman was out here in LA. This was, you know, like, gosh, 2011, 2012, I can't remember, but he was basically out here just kind of hanging out. And that's when I met up to interview him for my show. And it was one of those things where it's like, when I met him right away, it was kind of like, I think you know the same stuff that I know.
Yeah,
and like within 5 minutes, you know, we were talking about old stupid hardcore records. And then I just started to, like I said, I didn't view that world with that prism. But then once I started to, I was just like, oh, everybody's everywhere.
Yeah.
And like, I actually like no slam on Justin from Mondo. Cause I mean, I know obviously he didn't come from that sort of same world, but I almost find it weird now when people that are really involved heavily in this soundtrack community don't have any kinship to that whatsoever.
Yeah.
They're not like, oh, I don't. Yeah. Like I've heard of the Misfits, and it's just like, especially of a certain generation.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. Especially like when you guys interviewed, I'm totally blanking on the dude's name from Lunaris.
Chad.
Just from the outside presentation, he seems like a pretty button up dude. But then once I started to hear him in your guys' interview start to reference the fact that he was into all that same stuff, I was like, huh, they're everywhere. There's
you never know. And I think one of the things that kind of, you know, it doesn't bug me as such, but like through this show, I've kind of, you know, I speak to a lot of people as well, you know, because I run a record store. So obviously I speak to distributors and stuff like that. And I speak to some people at soundtrack labels that have no clue. They're just like, this is just a title that we're putting, like, I'm talking about the bigger labels here, not like the independents that are doing it, you know, because they love the movies. And I just think, wow, like, to you, this is just a title that you're releasing, but you don't know the impact or the effect this is going to have on, like, you know, a few thousand people kind of thing. And, you know, it does, it's sort of like you say, it kind of, it weirds me out when somebody that's not in our world dips, like, comes in the world but doesn't really get it. That's, you know, that's one thing that kind of bugs me about, because soundtracks have become so big now. It's you know, when, you know, kind of the major labels are getting back into releasing soundtracks, but they're releasing things that you can still buy for like $2-3 in the you know, in the flea markets and stuff, so they're not back.
There's always going to be there's a lot of that kind of cash grab going on, but even some of the stuff that's, like you say, then maybe you don't get the impression that it's like a passion project or whatever. I'm slightly different in that I kind of see that this is sort of similar to, you know, this sort of heyday when I first started buying soundtracks, and that was, you know, in the 80s, and it just means there's going to be more stuff around. You know, I can choose to buy it or not buy it, but there's a lot more stuff around, and it's not, I genuinely don't think it will last at this level. So it's kind of like a make hay while the sun shines for me. So, you know, no, I don't mean that to sound sort of like pessimistic. I just think it's inevitable that, you know, there'll be some falling off.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like, maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken, and I wish that I would be able to, like, get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit BetterHelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Ray.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hello, fine people. Pardon the interruption, but this is an important announcement. Our good friends of Audible are back, and I'm excited about that because Audible is an incredible service. So, like, me, myself, I love reading, but I only have maybe time to read for about 5 or 10 minutes a day. Like, right before I go to bed, I get through, like, 4 or 5 pages, and it stinks because I want to read and consume so much more. And you're listening to podcasts. You know what's up with spoken audio. Like, this is a no-brainer. So they offer 180,000 books at audible.com.
all from the leading publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, and business information providers. They have a free app that works on iPhones, iPads, Android, and Windows Phone. And you can download and listen to on your Kindle Fire or over 500 other MP3 players. And unlike a streaming or rental service, with Audible, you own your own books, so you can access them anytime, anywhere, right from your smartphone. And Audible also says, if you don't like it, they'll give it back to you. And when I say give it back, it means give you another book. It's the Great Listen Guarantee. If you decide you don't like the book, no time, like the present, to turn it back and get something you do like, which is amazing. So for the listeners of this show, I want you to sign up for your free 30-day trial membership at audible.com/100words. So audible.com/100words. And you can download books like this one I'm about to recommend. Carrie Brownstein, known from Portlandia, also in the amazing band Sleater-Kinney, wrote Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl. I recently listened to this book, 7 hours of pure ecstasy. And I know that's a very tall recommendation, but it's an amazing book. It's her memoir. She gets into so many different sides of her life, and she's led a very interesting life. So you can get that book at audible.com/100words and get your free 30-day trial. Just do it up, audible.com/100words. Thank you very much, Audible. You are the best.
Every week they sound better and better. They're the team behind the Modern Vinyl Podcast. Modern Vinyl says, if you're gonna advertise a podcast, make it hot.
It's music.
It's funny.
It's uncomfortably emotional.
Roundtable album discussions, all your favorite Modern Vinyl games, and some of the most fantastic guests in music, all on the Modern Vinyl Podcast. The Record Store Talk coming through your headphones. Subscribe on iTunes or visit modern-vinyl.com.
Can't help but feel that certain there's a predatory nature to some of it, especially it's like when you're looking at some of the absurdly inflated prices where it's like, hey, here's $45 for a 110 gram LP on black vinyl with no gatefold, and you're just like, what am I paying for? Like, this is stupid. Like, and you're not even including like a liner note. Like, come on. And that's when you just want that to go away, because obviously it just makes it worse for everybody. But I'm going to spring this on you guys because I didn't necessarily prep you for this, but because like I said, the sort of introductory soundtracks that I do, I kind of go to for people who are, just kind of dipping their toes into it and don't really have any context for it. Like I said,
I'm interested to know which one. Oh, so yeah, Dawn of the Dead's one of them.
Yeah, I'll run through them, and then obviously you guys can sprinkle in what you think from here. But yeah, I usually do the original Dawn of the Dead, just because that's relatively easy to find on the internet, and even if you're just streaming it, obviously.
Is that the Goblin one? It's the Goblin one. Okay.
Yes, the Goblin one.
Yeah, that would be really weird. The library cues.
Yeah,
record. That would be like.
I just had to ask. I was thinking that's an odd choice.
I mean, it has on it, but you're going to rule out like 50% of people straight away.
I'm glad we cleared that up. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarity. Like that score doesn't even enter my head. But yes, the Goblin.
Oh, you should have it. It's so good.
It's true. It's quite hubris. And then usually for more recent ones, like the Drive soundtrack is obviously perfect because it just really engages people. They're just like, oh, I didn't think like that again, that like so many songs would be a part of the actual soundtrack. And plus that movie obviously has a great aesthetic. Halloween is obviously another perfect introduction for people because, again, going back to what you guys are saying, where it's just like you could play the Michael Myers tune and people are like, oh yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah.
And then this is a little left of center, but it kind of really embodies what if you're talking about a sort of traditional composer, where it's like the Untouchables soundtrack is a great introduction for people to be like, okay, this is what the music sounds like separate from the movie, that you could still listen to it and it evokes emotions and visuals that you might not have thought of.
Well, look, on a certain day, you'll have me saying that's probably one of the best scores ever written, full stop. It's just absolutely astonishing.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's It's so good. And the last one that, again, this is a more recent one, just because since most of this stuff is obviously more accessible now and people are putting it out on vinyl, the Nick soundtrack, where I think that's a little more ethereal, and you're going to be kind of, you know, pushing people to a more atmospheric direction. Mm. But it's like, again, I think that soundtrack does such a, or that score does such a good job of evoking emotions, and then also being able to bring to light visuals that you might not have even thought of separate from watching Nick in general. So those are kind of the ones that I've been giving people to, and it's been moderately successful, where it's like, you know, it's like give a person a seed and then all of a sudden a tree grows.
I mean those are good picks.
I would throw in a soundtrack with those scores. I'd throw in the Big Lebowski off the top of my head.
I think
that's just a fantastic it's a much loved film, so it kind of helps. But I think people watching that will understand that there's some good music in it. But then when they have the soundtrack, they'll be like, this is eclectic as fuck. I mean, this is like a really great mixtape. So, yeah, that's what you want from a soundtrack.
I think. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on my, I write a column for Blumhouse.com, doing their soundtrack column. And the next article I have going up is an introduction to horror soundtracks on vinyl. And one of the things that I strive to do all the time when I'm recommending something to someone now is recommending them something that still impress or isn't ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, I'm terrible for not doing that.
The thing is now, Ray, I mean, you'll know because, I mean, you've been listening, collecting soundtracks, whatever. Since this whole, you know, I don't want to call it a resurgence of vinyl, because, you know, vinyl never really went away. It was still there. But since soundtracks have started to become more popular on vinyl, and there's more labels now and more people doing it, some of the earlier presses from a couple of years ago, some of that stuff now is exchanging money, like ridiculous, like really commanding high money. And it's just because at the minute soundtracks are hot. So for the time being, yeah, you can put those ones aside because there is stuff that's still out there that's relatively easy to find and relatively cheap. You know, you might pay like $20, $25, but that's the going rate. So whenever I recommend anything to anybody, the first thing I try and do is like, right, what do they want to hear, or what do I want them to hear, and how much is it going to cost them? Because a recommendation is only as good as the person you're recommending it for. You know, you could recommend someone, oh, I think you should listen to Jerry Goldsmith's The Omen. That could scare the shit out of some people because it is in places very intense, very powerful. Or you could recommend them something like The Nick, which is very, you know, it's like being on drugs listening to that album. It's just, you know, it's what I would liken being on opium to. I've never been on opium, but I assume it's got that nice dreamlike quality to it. And, you know, sometimes I want to listen to The Nick and just relax. Sometimes I want to listen to The Omen and just have my, you know, hair blown off. So it's, I always find it hard to recommend stuff.
Something's just occurred to me as well, which is that I think, I might be wrong about this, but I think that the renewed interest in buying soundtrack records might be quite a lot to do with the physical thing as well, because there are less physical. Like back in the day, show my age, but back in the day, if you got into movies, there was a lot of stuff that you could buy. You could buy magazines about them. You could buy, you know, Fangoria covering it, and you could buy posters, and you could get...
You get like t-shirts.
You could get all
stuff,
sorts
of
stuff that was not just kind of like, you know, some company doing a little limited run of it. It would be like, no, there'd be a bunch of stuff about that movie that you could get, and you could then show your love of that thing by having physical stuff. And because there's less of that now, I think that maybe soundtracks are kind of filling that gap a bit for people. It's like a way of kind of, you know, waving that flag in the air and saying, I'm really down with this.
I'm a fan of this, yeah. I think some of it as well...
It just occurred to me that might be part of it.
I think part of it as well may be the collectability of the variants.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some records, they just look amazing. They just do. And yeah, like, I'm a big fan of black vinyl. When I first started buying records, you know, 30-odd years ago, records came on black vinyl. Occasionally, there would be a picture disc, and it would sound like garbage, but, you know, it was...
That's a picture disc in
exactly, that's a picture disc. But nowadays, you have these records that just look insane. They've got all these weird splatters and this and that, and, you know, it's kind of... I think part of that has definitely ramped up the collectability and drawn people in. Because it's
that's
like,
weird,
oh, this is
it?
A cool thing.
Yeah, but it's like an inverse of, like, again, going back, if I wasn't really, I'm kind of out of the loop a bit with you guys in terms of your connection with hardcore, because I wasn't really into hardcore, but I was more into, it was American music I was listening to, but it was more kind of like Sonic Youth and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's still, I would argue, not to interrupt, but I would argue that obviously, I mean, that has it very has, much.
It has some of the same roots. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just, you know, when people start talking about Black Flag and, you know, kind of, there's a lot of stuff that I literally know almost next to nothing about. Mm. I just, it never came my way. And Misfits, I didn't really hear much stuff at the time, but then later on. But it was kind of like, I've forgotten my train of thought on this one. I was never really aware of that side of things at the time. But I've lost my train of thought on that one completely.
I was really interested then in what you were going to say.
I interrupted you. I apologize.
No, it's fine. This will happen to me. Very senior moment.
One thing, actually, there's a question, actually, Ray, I wanted to ask you. How did you find our podcast?
It was, oh man, I want to say it was probably one of your guests. I wish I could really definitively place a finger on it, but it was one of your earlier shows. I'd have to look back in the archive I think it was that one, but I think it was a guest, and basically tweeted about appearing on it. And then I listened to it and I was just like, oh, so here's my long lost friends from over the pond. Here's some dudes speaking my language. And so, yeah, then I was all on board of after that.
No, it's cool because, like, a bunch of the podcasts that I listen to, I've kind of become friends with those guys because I kind of had an inkling, like, I bet those guys like soundtracks. Like, I could just tell by listening to your podcast, you're going to like soundtracks. And Rob from Killer POV has become, like, a really good friend of mine. And I adore their podcast because they kind of do what we do for movies. So they'll discuss movies, they'll have a guest and stuff like that. And it's just, it's a, like, this podcast world is so big, but so small at the same time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're all coming at it from the same place. We just have our own little, corners that we like to stand on, and we can just wave at each other from across the street and then occasionally invite one another over for some coffee or some drinks. And then, yeah, we'll be like, all right, cool. Well, cause essentially you don't, no one's protective over their audience. It's just a matter of like, cluing people in to cool stuff. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, you should listen to this because of this.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's like I was saying earlier, I think it's actually healthy for there to be more, you know, in this world of non-experts talking enthusiastically about stuff they like to other people that like that stuff. I think the more the better. It was to me always that way with, like, whether it was kind of like cult movies or, you know, I want there to be like five cinemas showing cool movies, not just one. Because I'm much more likely to go to those cinemas if I've got a choice. And I think it's like cool to have like as many people as possible doing the same thing. Obviously,
me too. Yeah.
There's not that many soundtrack podcasts as far as we know.
I don't know any others that are quite like ours. I know there's a couple out there, but I mean, even if you could do a soundtrack podcast just on horror movies alone, yeah, I mean, we do genre stuff. Of course we do. But I mean, that's not necessarily the best stuff all the time, so
and it also wouldn't interest me. No. I mean, I love that stuff, but I wouldn't want to be kind of
do it all the time.
Yeah, well, yeah. I just wouldn't want to be kind of fenced into being that specific about it.
There's too many great 80s synth scores to, like, you know, canon movies that people have forgotten about how great they are.
We had a moment earlier where Tony on the episode played, you have to say what it is. You blew my mind with that. I mean, I thought I'd heard everything.
Dragon Sound from the movie
Miami Connection,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is like some very obscure movie that Alamo Drafthouse kind of unearthed, and then I actually put out the theme on a 7-inch, and Tony played it to me, and I was like, shit, you've got to hear the theme from Young Warriors, like this 80s canon movie, and then spent like 15 minutes just going, where the fuck is it? Where's the record? But yeah, that's awesome that we just kind of like trigger these little sort of neurons firing, like, oh, that's cool, you got to hear this.
Right. It's
madness,
showing people,
really.
Showing people cool stuff. I don't know if you guys wanted to, cause I have to jet here in about 10 minutes.
Okay.
I don't know if you wanted to dive into any of the vinyl score stuff. Or
definitely. I'm well up for doing vinyl score if you are.
Yeah, man, go for it.
We'll piece this together in a way that makes sense. Do you want to intro it then, Tony?
Yeah, I'll do my usual.
Do your quick, and it's like four tunes, but you'll just get like 40 seconds of each one, so it shouldn't take too long.
No problem.
Especially if you get them all straight away.
Yeah, if you do that, it will be over in
which
minutes.
Which will happen.
Yeah. Right, so let's wrap this sucker up. It's been absolutely wonderful talking to you, Ray. It's been I wasn't sure how this was going to go, but it's been awesome. It genuinely is. We should do more of these crossover things with cool podcasts. But we'll definitely have to have you back on at some point as well, because I'm sure there'll be a ton more to talk about somewhere down the line. But now all the friendliness has gone from the room. I'm going to hand you over to Scott now for the not so dreaded. Because 2016 is the year that we're pro vinyl score, or I'm pro vinyl score. So yes, I'm going to hand you over now to Scott, and he's going to give you the lowdown on the vinyl score.
Well, our first vinyl score of the year, actually. It's been quite a while since we've done one, so thanks for taking the plunge.
Yes, I will. I will do my best, and I will echo the sentiments as well. I knew this was going to be fun, so I appreciate you guys obviously indulging my idea and been like, this makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sure we could fill a lot more virtual airtime.
We could.
So you're going to hear four tracks from, and I'll, what I've done, and I sometimes do this, is like without knowing really your kind of habits, or you know, we don't like to make this kind of like a real dick move and just trying to catch people out. So I've kind of like tried to pitch it a little bit towards what I think you might be into. Who knows? But you're going to hear four tracks, and if you can give me the film and the composer, you get 2 points, or one for each.
Great.
Cool. Get yourself on that scoreboard, because it is the place for where the cool kids hang out.
Yeah. I love our scoreboard, by the way.
It's great.
I legit just want 1 point, so that's the bar that I'm aiming for.
Let's cool. Okay, I'm just having a look down the list now of what Scott's got for you, and
Not too bad.
I see what you're getting with this.
Cool,
so,
right.
Yeah.
So here's your first selection coming up. Oh, and I should just say, this is the off-air bit, because of the way I have to fade it down and stuff like that, if you just wait until we fade back up before you talk about it.
We'll do.
Does that make sense? Okay.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Born in Chicago, raised in the city streets, my mama gave me the basic facts of life.
Get in the car, boy. Put your seatbelt on. I never ride with anyone unless they wear the seatbelt. That's one of my rules.
And we're back in the room.
Spectacular. you warmed my heart because in the back of my head I was like, okay, if they're gonna ask me to do the vinyl score, like I said my bar was 1 point, so
yeah,
in my head I was like, okay, I'm barely certain because they have no clue really to what I listen to from a soundtrack perspective.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably gonna look in the sort of punkish direction.
Mm-hmm.
And Please include Repo Man. Because
awesome.
That is where I will potentially get a point. So it's Repo Man. Obviously the second song was TV Party by Black Flag.
Yes, that's 2 points there. Very good. And we obviously had the psychic connection fully engaged for that one.
I really appreciate that because and I there's obviously a further connection with Henry Rollins being one of the amazing character actors. Mm-hmm. in many movies, getting his foot shot in Point Break. That was Anthony Kiedis. Yeah, sorry. But anyways,
Turn in Johnny Mnemonic is worth remembering.
his new movie, actually, He Never Died, is really worth checking out.
Oh, here, that's good.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's actually quite good. Yeah.
Yeah, but well, yes, but thank you very much.
No problem. To be honest, like any excuse, because it is just really is the gift that keeps giving, that soundtrack. I mean, I think there was a time when it like went missing from my collection and I realized at some point and I was like, I have never moved as quickly. I've never replaced a record as quickly as I did that day. It was a bad time. But we're scoring 2-2 at the moment. So things are going to get a little rougher for you. Probably.
That's fine.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
But you'll take it. You've already hit your bar. So here comes your second tune.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
It is just about to get tasty, that one, but Hopefully that's
enough.
You cut
it off too quick.
If you know, you know. If you know, you know.
If I know, I know. And I don't know.
Oh, well. But,
I mean, I...
We like, do clues. We do clues. So I'm going to give you a clue. Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, still not helping me. I apologize.
No. That's fine. Early 90s. I can't believe if you say you've never seen this film, that would be a massive shock.
Right.
but it's possible. It's possible that you've not seen it. Very early 90s. I think it was like 90, 91, something like that. And
I was thinking, well, no. Yeah, no, I wasn't going to be able to venture a guess.
Ah, well, that one is from, it's Paramad, and I think they're English from the intro.
Yeah.
The track's called Slaughterhouse, and it's from Wild at Heart.
Yes, I...
And it's that awesome opening thing. You're going to say that you had an inkling about what it was now.
No, I didn't, because I have never seen that movie.
Oh, so really?
I'm defying your expectations of me.
Yeah.
I even worked at a Blockbuster Video over here, and I can see the cover box. I put the movie away, but just never watched it. So
it sounds terrible of me to say it, because like I'm sort of patronizing or something. But I genuinely can't believe that there are people that haven't seen that film, because it's so great. But The use of the tunes in that is really good. It's worth checking out.
Okay, I remember the cover box didn't there was a pink dress, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Okay, that's worth a point.
Yeah. Stretching slightly.
I'm making up my own rules as we go.
It's cool. My thought process a little bit on that was that kind of movie was the point where Lynch started to branch out a bit with music and started using metal and, you know, hardcore tunes in his films. And so that carried on. You know, there's like later films like Lost Highway where he's using stuff like Rammstein and stuff. It gets quite absurd. But yeah, he obviously got his metal on in the early 90s, and it stayed on for at least a decade.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Right. This next one is score rather than soundtrack. So let's see if this is better or worse for you.
Thank you.
Number three coming up.
States Marine Corps. 1, 2, 3, 4, I love the Marine Corps. 1, 2, 3, 4, I love the Marine Corps. a little bit, and we're going a little bit too slow.
Okay.
He had a tough one turning that off, didn't he?
That was really tough.
Is Full Metal Jacket, is that the movie?
It mm-hmm. is.
Okay. Full Metal Just Jacket. Wanted to make sure. Because it was I was originally pulled towards Apocalypse Now, but That's just from the score bit, but then obviously once I heard the voice.
I think that's fantastic. You get a point for the film. And the composers, I know the composer's name, but I probably, if I was in your shoes, I might struggle a little bit to remember it. So that's a bit of a cheap trick. What we'll do instead is if you can give us the name of the chap who was shouting during that track, the actor.
Oh man.
Then you could get an extra point.
Oh gosh.
I mean, he did quite a few movies, but he'll always be remembered for his work on Full Metal Jacket, and he's no longer with us, sadly.
Yes, I know. Oh man,
he has a first initial and then followed by two names.
Yeah, it's like I want to say it's like
it's so tough.
Robert, isn't that his first name? Maybe
R for Robert, but I don't know what his first name is, but the first initial is R, and then he has two names after that.
And his character's name Hartman, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, I remember that. But good lord!
Wow, you got the character's name though.
I think that's worth a point.
I actually couldn't remember that myself. So That was R. Lee Ermey, is the actor? But he was here playing. Is it Corporal Hartman or?
It wouldn't be Corporal.
Sergeant. He was Sergeant
Hartman. Full Metal Jacket. Awesome. That track, as I say, was just really difficult to pull the slider down on.
I used to have that on 7-inch.
They did it as a
single over here called I Want to Be a Drill Instructor.
Yeah.
And I bought that as a kid. I had no clue what Full Metal Jacket was. I just, because it was kind of like a mega mix with this like really crap 80s beat. But now I'm like, I had good taste as a child. That was a great single.
Right, I've got three possible choices here for your last track.
So Ray has 4 points right now.
You've got four right four now, and potential for another two.
I'm 300% better than I imagined I was going to do, so great.
You're doing great. I'm going to let Tony pick which of these three we're going to hit you with.
I'm leaning towards the top left, purely and simply because everybody knows that.
Okay.
Oh God! Now you just said really, you just did it.
You've really coffin nailed that one, haven't you?
No. I mean,
I might take a chance and go for this one.
Yeah,
because I think it's pretty.
You think
not? Maybe not so much as.
I think the top one's
We'll probably, go with the top one. Okay.
I don't know.
Actually, I'm not going to tell you which one it is.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes it. It's like a blind test.
I'm just going to go ahead and guess it right now. It's Celine Dion, Titanic.
Oh, how did he know?
We're going to have to knock you a point because the song isn't called Titanic. I'm so sorry, Ray. So sorry.
Yeah, you did so well up until this point.
I know. Sorry. My heart will go on, guys. Come on, please.
You have let yourself down. Sorry. Here comes your last pick. Hang up the chick carrot, hang it up, daddy, or you'll be alone in a quick. Hang up the chick carrot, hang it up, daddy, or you'll never get another fix. I'm telling you it's not a trick, pay attention, don't be thick, or you're liable to get licked. You're gonna see the reason why when they're spitting in your eye, they'll be spitting in your eye. Hang up the chick carrot, hang it up, daddy, or girl's not a tonic for a pill. Hang up the chick carrot, hang it up, daddy, you're just jumping for a spill. There you go. Very energetic. Very fantastic. It's called Chick Habit, which you probably guessed from the chorus. The song's Chick Habit,
right? There's a lot of weird memories flooding back in regards to
recovered memories.
Right. Well, this if I remember correctly, like this was in a Tarantino movie. Ooh. Like, wasn't this in Death Proof?
Oh,
there we go.
Fucking nailed it.
Told you.
Nailed it. Can you remember the artist though? For two points.
See, because this, I want to say yes.
Well, make sure.
I want to say there was a bit there. Well, there was an older punk band called The Queers that did some, like, I don't know if it's their song, because I didn't celebrate their entire catalog, but
I wish I had the answers to this one, but I'm afraid I don't have the answers.
No, it's okay. It's just the lyrics stuck out to me, but gosh, I can't think of the name of the actual art, like the song that you played.
We give clues. I'm going to give you a clue to, it's a solo artist is credited, and her first name, her Christian name, is the name of a month of the year.
A name of the month?
Yeah,
of
but
the...
that's all you're getting from us. Mm. You're on your own now.
Oh gosh. March.
So close.
I have no idea.
Yeah, that, well, it's bizarre actually.
Thinking about it, because that's her surname. There are a lot of women's names in the names of the month.
No, I've just realised that both of her names are months.
Oh yeah, no,
I'm such
are,
a
yeah.
putz.
Yeah.
One of them being March.
Oh, so that March is the last name.
Yeah.
And,
I think that's right. Let me just check.
Yeah.
It is. I really had to think for a second there. I was like, that can't be right. That can't be right.
This seems so bizarre.
January, September.
It probably wasn't her real name. Let's just go as far as that.
Well, her surname's March. Do you want to have a punt at that first month?
April.
Oh, shit.
And he nails it in
Boom.
One.
Oh, my April, March.
April, March.
It's almost like they've just gone, opened a calendar and gone, April, March. Oh, there you go.
Oh, that's amazing. Wow.
That is amazing.
Yeah,
well,
April, March.
Not only have you not disgraced yourself and hit your own bar running, frankly, you're pretty much the middle of the board there. Like, yeah, 6 points.
Big six.
I feel vindicated. I feel like I feel like I went through the gauntlet. This feels because I frankly haven't done a test in years. So this is this was high on my anxiety ridden brain.
It was very much like the atmosphere here was very much like the movie Creed for quite a lot of that. It wasn't looking so great, and then
it gets slopes.
You pulled it out of the bag.
Great. Well, I appreciate that. The picks were definitely gentle on my ears, so thank you.
Thanks, man.
They would have been different if I'd have picked them. I'll say that much now. I am a far harsher master than Scott is.
You would have just played 14 minutes of Sun for me.
Yeah. It's so. What's this one note? Oh right. Yeah. Is that boring?
Oh shit! Do you know what? I'm spoiling it by saying it because we could do it on somebody, but those are gas tracks from Sinister would be good.
Yeah.
I bet somebody would
because they probably would.
Yeah.
Ah, another story for another time. Yeah. But anyway, Ray, thank you for joining us on the DFC. Thank you for inviting us to be part of the 100 Words podcast. Yeah. And, thank you for doing the vinyl score. Not everybody agrees to it. So
not everybody lives.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us. And, hope to talk to you again down the road.
Absolutely. This could be a recurring feature for both of our shows.
Just do it. No, weekly. I like it. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Cool. Have a good day, buddy.
Thanks,
we'll talk
Ray.
To you again soon.
No problem, guys. Thanks. So there you go. That was a nice, fun, and rollicking conversation about the beauty of podcasts, soundtracks, and I hope that it kind of brings some connective tissue together for you, the listener, of why you should invest time in this musical landscape, in this musical world that most people just kind of like, oh, yeah, it's just background music or whatever. And it's like, yeah, it technically is, but there's so much beauty and amazing stories behind it that, why not? I mean, realistically, there's so much more bad music out there that you can listen to. Why not listen to something good, right? So anyways, thank you very much, Tony and Scott, for doing this little fun project with me, because I hit them up and was kind of like frantic in an email being like, hey, this would be a good idea, right, guys? Right. And fortunately, they agreed. So listen to the Damn Fine Cast. It is a great weekly digest of all this sort of stuff, and it'll definitely fan your obsession of this stuff if you decide to go down this world. So thank you very much, and please, until next week, be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com. Shh. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
In the 90s, New York detective Louis Scarcella locked up the worst criminals.
Putting bad guys away, there's no feeling like it.
Then jailhouse lawyers took aim, led by Derek Hamilton.
Scarcella took me to the precinct and lied.
20 men eventually walked free. Now, in the Burden podcast, after a decade of silence, Louis Scarcella finally tells his story, and so does Derek Hamilton. Listen to The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.